This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Tan Chung Han and Kusu Chuang, and it's time for the top business stories of the day. We begin with the tax man. It has cometh to the international schools because it started as a lot of whisperings. A lot of people talked about whether the IRB had gone to the international schools to get information, but now it's been confirmed. In fact, the Inland Revenue Board of Malaysia has confirmed that it has issued letters to several international schools requesting relevant financial information on the parents of students studying at those institutions.
Yeah, so the IRB has described it as a routine procedure. Now, this came to light actually starting from a couple of days ago when screenshots of these letters that were being sent out by the schools to the parents and notifying them that, hey, you know, we have sent all these your financial information or your personal information to the IRB based on their request. And subsequently, that sparked a lot of chatter. Lots of news portals have picked it up. And here we are this morning talking about it.
Yeah, so it's actually allowed because a lot of people are saying, oh, how can you share this information? But then there's legislative precedent. It's Section 1881 of the Income Tax Act 1967, which basically tells people or institutions to share information where tax information is not forthcoming. Look, I mean, at the end of the day, okay, if you ain't got nothing to hide, then you ain't got to be worried, right?
Then you have to say that with some pizzazz, though. Come on. You can do better than that.
No, come on. It takes an American to say that.
Well, I want to come back to what is it that the schools could have in terms of information on the parents that would be relevant to the income tax department? Is it the sheer fact those parents have kids and they're paying those top dollars, top ringgit, as it were, to put their kids in schools? Or is it... I mean, are schools mining data from parents about their financial health?
No. I think what the Inland Revenue is trying to do a Sherlock Holmes, and they're trying to pick up clues along the way. And these clues will give them, you know, tidbits for the next part of the investigation. Mm. And but, I just want to say that one of our listeners, Victor Liu, actually tweeted in. He's saying that if you do want to, you know, go on this trail, you should also look at the owners of luxury cars because, oh, is that too close to home? I think that's a good point, Victor.
Right. So the chatter was that, look, if some of these parents may be under-declaring their income, yet sending their kids to these elite schools where their tuition fees run upwards of 100,000 ringgit per child per year, then there could be this disconnect, right? So that's the chatter that's going on. Because I first came across this on a Facebook group for parents who have kids, or I think I'm sending their kids to international schools, and you know, this was a couple of days ago.
Yeah, so the parents are unhappy, and they're unhappy primarily with the schools, not with the IRB, but IRB. And Chuang, you rightly pointed out that there's there are provisions in the law for such information to be shared. You know, was there a breach of a privacy or on the part of the schools? I guess that's the next chapter in the story. I mean, the story might fizzle out for all we know.
Yeah, maybe, you know, but judging by some commentary from parents who have spoken to some of these media outlets, you know, they are going to check with their lawyers and whatnot. But from the IRB's standpoint, you know, also knowing that they have a push, right? They have a target to collect about 135 billion ringgit in direct taxes this year. You know, that could explain some of the rationale for these kind of measures.
Look, I mean, I'm looking at this Malay Mail story, and they've actually said, IRB, that tax evaders will be hit with a 100% penalty starting January this year. That's up from the current 45%. So, be afraid, be very afraid, I think.
Well, unless you're above board and you file your taxes.
Correct,
coming into tax season soon, at the end of the month, isn't it? We should be declaring our taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can do it online. I did it, and I've been doing it, and it's easy peasy, I think.
So you're safe, Lash, right?
No, almost. But you know how important taxes are to the strength of the state, and you know, and the fascinating discussions on why Afghanistan, for instance, is a country that constantly falls apart, and that's because of the only real revenue that they can be taxable in Afghanistan is opium, you know, and they can't do that because of, you know, all the obvious reasons, and therefore they've got a very weak state. So For a strong straight, you have to pay your taxes.
I love how you went from Malaysia to Afghanistan. Just a flick of a switch.
Yeah,
you
know? I know.
All right, so now, while the IRB, you know, it has this push to this target to strive towards for this year, yet the government has also, you know, allowed for some tax exemptions for some, you know, big-name key infrastructure projects, you know, i.e. the ECRL, that's the East Coast Rail Link. So when that story was revealed a few days ago, again, much commentary since then from customs and also from think tanks and the like.
You know, we had on the Breakfast Grill in early January French professor Elsa de Lafayette de Michaud, and who, together with two other French scholars, have published a book in French. At the moment, it's only in French. It's going to be translated into English, on the special relationship between Malaysia and China. But, you know, putting this in context, you also have to note that her research has been primarily on the way in which the Malaysian economy has weathered crises over time. And so this is her explaining the special relationship between Malaysia and China.
When you study Malaysia-China relationship, it's also a question of chance and of time. It's the right time. China has been here at the right time to support Malaysian economy, and it means also to support Najib Razak, very objectively. Yes, you have tied your economy very neatly and closely with China in the last 10 years, and even more in the last 5 years, because if you look at the investment from the all over the world to Malaysia, China was still number four investing in Malaysia in 2014. In a blink of an eye, China has become number one for Malaysian investment. So it's very impressive. Does it mean that Malaysia has lost its sovereignty? I don't know. And now it's a question of political choice, political ability. Can you be close to China still being yourself as a nation?
Elsa de Lafayette de Michaud, associate professor at the Reni2 University in Paris, we had on the Breakfast Grill in January. You can download the BFM app and listen to the full conversation where we talk about her views on the Malaysian economy as well as on this issue of the China-Malaysia relations.
No, it's an apt question because her, the clip just ended with, can Malaysia be sovereign as well as being so close, enjoy such a close nexus with China? And, you know, this whole ECRL thing is absolutely germane to the discussion because it's a 55 billion ringgit project. And being exempt from 6% GST is 3.3 billion ringgit in taxes foregone to the state coffers. Now, has Malaysia bent over backwards too much to allow China to do its business in this country? It's a bit more complex than that because I think the Customs Department is quite right in pointing out that even during Mahathir's time and not wanting to fall into the trap of politicizing the issue, the same exemption similarly was given, were given to other mega infrastructure projects as well, including, I think, the MRT and the tunnel, yeah?
Yeah, the tunnel, I think the towers as well. Now, like, whether or not this is foregone...
The smart tunnel, sorry.
Yeah, smart tunnel, yeah. No, whether or not this is foregone revenue for the government, I think that's... I don't think that's really the case because, look, you've got the customer that's... the government that's the end customer. So, in essence, they'd be paying for a tax which would go back into the coffers and it doesn't make sense. But what it would do, it would elevate the... Elevate the costs for this massive project, right? So the idea is to lower the bar so that you can roll out this massive infrastructure project and hopefully it'll have the spillover economic benefit.
Okay, so the question is how you implement GST. And GST systems typically around the world try to make it simple, right? You don't have too many exemptions. If you want to give money back, you give it in other ways. You keep it administratively as simple as possible. India, of course, has, a four-tier GST system. But that's Indian. I'm not going to get into it because I don't know the details. But is this a good idea, especially because the other businesses were saying, well, we have multiplier effects. We were contributing to the economy. Why don't we get those exemptions? And so the issue of an exemption will throw up questions of, a special relationship or privileges to some, and where does that come from?
Yeah, but there's a bit of weight to the customs discussion because, as you say, Han, it's really the government paying for the GST. And for them, because it's a straight pass-through, right? So you pay for the project and then it comes back to you within the quarter and then, Bob's your uncle. So the thing is, when the thing is built, just like the smart tunnel, just like the MRT and all the other associated benefits that come along the way, such as the property development, your retail, your commercial and what have you, And then, of course, that's where you get your bang for your buck, because that's where you get the GST. So it's a much longer term effect. So the whole, I think the issue here is the politicians being, you know, we're just 15, 16 days away from polls. All these things have become politicized in the short term without, you know, conveniently ignoring the longer term benefits of these infrastructure projects.
Okay, and you can also download our grill with Dato' Munir Majid, who also takes up the question of whether we can deal with China in a way and negotiate with them, because he does say that we can. We're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll have the bulletin. We'll be back with a look at the stock market and more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.